Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
That is right. We are in the midst of some fussing and a fighting, and more fighting than fussing. I wish we were just fussing. Here we are in the midst of many battlefields. And this is the time that I remind you that, first of all, I'm Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we are connecting people who are on various battlefields. They are fighting for democracy. They are fighting for sanity, in many cases, just outright sanity in this crazy world that we live in. But we still have a president in the White House who is a 34 felon, convicted felon, a pathological liar, as is the rest of his cabinet. And so I have advised you, don't believe a damn thing they say, not a damn thing. Don't believe even the pictures that they show you, because that, as we are starting to see now, even those are manufactured. So unfortunately, we have a federal government that we can no longer have faith in. And so really, it is on us, the people, to make sure this democracy is saved and uplifted and defended. And we're going to do that. In fact, yesterday was the court date for at the Missouri Supreme Court to deal with this redistricting bill that we think is illegal. And so Denise Lieberman and her team from Missouri Voter Protection argue that case. There was a rally up there. So I want to thank all the folks who were able to get up there, represent, because we can't always be at all on the battlefields. I wasn't able to be there. And so there were people who were there, and that's the way that we have to look at it. Get in where you fit in, but we got to be doing something. We can't be spectators as we see democracy being torn into shreds. So, kudos for that. We won't get a decision for a while, but I understand that the arguments went very well. Despite the fact that all of the media coverage is on Iran, there's still genocide going on in Gaza. And so we can't forget the Palestinian struggle there. There is so much going on, but what I've asked you to do is to find one media source that you trust, because it's a whole lot of disinformation out there and there's AI at play, particularly on social media. And so you don't want to be distracted by that. You want to get the real facts, because that's going to inform how you move. I know it informs how I move in the organizations that I'm a part of, how they move. So, you know, we are fortunate to have as a guest this morning, Khalid Moin Daisha. So when you hear my theme music, he is part of the Infrared Rockers band that created that. And so he's also a founding member of the Organization for Black Struggle. We're going to be talking about that organization and its legacy. And so we want to welcome Khalid Moin Daisha to Voices from the Battlefield.
Thank you. And let me just say, I'm so honored, as always, to be able to come on shows like this one, especially yours, Jamala, to help people understand what OBS is about and what we are about in terms of the struggle that we have been waging for 46 years. And I also want to just like hail up women this month.
Yeah.
Because that's, I think that's very important to be done. Because we always used to say that women hold up half the sky. Well, I think sometimes they hold up more than half. I
mean, yeah, more like two-thirds.
Because like, why y'all letting the sisters lift it all by themselves? Anyhow, I just want to open up by saying those things.
Happy Women's Month to all of our sisters out there in struggle, because sometimes we are underrepresented, disrespected, undervalued. And so not just this month does that, but it also, just like Black History Month, it gives us a chance to really focus in on the accomplishments and the impact that we've had on society, both in terms of politics, culture, and even the economic world. So thank you for helping to remind us about that, Kalimu. So remind me of the, I know the song that we play, Do It Right, it's on an album. What's that album? Is that the album? Because it was another song that I was tempted to use for my theme song, but I can't think of it now. So what album was that on? I know it was part of a CD.
It's hard for me to remember because we had albums and CDs and stuff. And so then I cannot readily recall that. My memory is not as photographic as it used to be.
Yeah, but that song I really like because it speaks to being unified. Yes, there's fussing and fighting going on, and we're going to do that. We do that in our own families, but ultimately there's got to be some positive and peaceful resolution, and it talks about unity, and so I really like that song. So I begin with it, and I end with it. So thank you for that contribution.
Jamal, just one quick piece. See, Johari and Daisha, that's sister. See, the songbird, she was the person who wrote all those songs way back there then. She wrote these songs back in the 80s and the 90s, and they're still so relevant now today. And that's the thing that people need to understand when we talk about celebrating women. Hey, where would we be without our women in this struggle?
And the other thing I would say is the impact of culture in our struggle.
Exactly.
Because when I look at the songs, the soundtrack for the Black Liberation Movement, we got plenty to choose from. And actually, I've been wondering, I'm going to ask some of our young rappers and songbirds, like, where's the soundtrack for now? Because I don't hear a whole lot about like what's going on in this particular, some anti-fascist songs from Black artists. And I know, you know, they got some issues, but, you know, somebody needs to be thinking about how are we going to memorialize this period of time in music and art. And yeah, I haven't seen it as strong as we had it in the 60s. Yeah, so we're looking for that because we need that. That is the inspiration for the movement. It's also the affirmation of the movement. And so that song for me, the other song I try to think of is In a Troubled Times. I almost chose that because we are in a Troubled Times. And so, but this one I think matched more what I wanted to do. So one of, you know, there's a couple of things that think were the reason that OBS was so unique in its founding in 1980. And that was, there was a group of people that came together that were already organizing in the community. They were organizing around police terror. They were organizing Black student movement, the anti-war movement. And so we came with a certain set of not just skills, but a worldview about how, what we needed to do as young people in not only in St. Louis, but in the world. And so I think that really helped to start us on a strong foundation because we were organizations like People Fighting Repression, Missouri struggling against Missouri prisons. I'm trying to think of the whole name for that. It was a long name. And we always had culture. We had proletariat ensemble, and then you all evolved into ultimately infrared rockers, infrared funk, and so all of those were pieces, threads that we tied together coming into the founding of the Organization for Black Struggle in 1980, and even youth organizing, because some of us who were part of the Congress of African People had the youth group, the Malaika Wachanga and the Simba Wachanga, and those young people part of the neighborhood at the Rowan Community Center, which at that time was the Heykalu. So we had you know, those bases, and even the women's struggles. We had the out of the Congress of African People, there was a social organization, and we did lots of things with the women, including celebrate Women's History Month, and also ultimately helped to found the National Black Women's United Front. So we got some roots that helped us to be strong, a big strong tree, and then spread out. So I want to, because you are here and because we are in the midst of 8 wars, people don't know that in 1 year, Trump and his MAGA friends have started 8 wars across the continent. And interestingly enough, they're all countries of color. So let me just say that, because he ain't did a damn thing to Russia. But Kalimu was part of the war resistors for Vietnam and took a stand back in, what, 69, 68, when the war was raging. And I just want to ask you, what led you to that that decision? Because it was going to end in court-martial, it was going to end in prison, but you stood firm.
Well, let me just start off by saying that growing up, I was never interested in going into the military. Even though I had one uncle who joined the military, he was a lifer. I never got to really see much of him. And then after he finally retired, he didn't live that much longer after that, based on, you know, all the stuff that you go through while you're in there. So that was not a good example there. But then I had one of my best friends went into the Navy, and his name was PJ. When he came back out, very militant. And that's when he persuaded me and some other friends to grow naturals and stuff. And we just these militant people at that point. But his thing to me, he said, look, don't go into the military, just too racist and stuff. Go to school, get in school. And he just encouraged me on that point right there. And that's what I ultimately ended up doing, going to Forest Park Community College. Because, yeah, what I was doing? Dodging the draft. Because my thing was, I'm not going to go. So while I was there, I became educated because we had what was called Association of Black Collegians. And we brought in all kinds of speakers, Action, the Black Nationalist Organization, the Patriot Party, et cetera. You know, we brought folks like that in, and they was always saying, it's about Black power in the community. They say, that's white people's war over there. That's not our war. That was one thing that came across loud and clear. So when SDS, Students for Democratic Society, came to Forest Park Community College to shut it down for the moratorium against the war, we joined in. That was a logical thing for us to join in. And some of us got locked up and things like that, you know, because it was a battle back there then, because they brought the pigs out and stuff like that against us and stuff, but that didn't matter. But our thing was, we opposed it at that point. And then all of us, we played like, well, in the brothers in the ABC, we said, no, we're not going to war. Some of us like held true. I was one of those folks who said, I'm not going to go. If they draft me, I'm not going. And so back then, they didn't have no way of really, well let me say this, counseling for Black men who wanted to not go to war, who wanted to be a conscientious objector, that was not that well developed and stuff. And so I didn't get the benefit of that, so I tried every possible way not to go in. I went down there full of drugs and stuff. That didn't do no good. They said, no, yeah, who's checking you anyhow? And so I ended up in Fort Lewis, Washington. I said, what am I going to do? I said, oh, I'm going to refuse to cut off my head. This big old natural. I'm not going to cut off my natural. I'm not going to shave my beard. That was my first thing. They said, what? This is a reception station. You know? They said, what? And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Then they say fingerprint. I said, I'm not going to be fingerprinted. I was facing 20 years, you know, 10 years for each count, you know, believe it or not. That's how much time I was facing. But the bottom line was, my thing was, I was also inspired by Muhammad Ali. He said, I ain't gone, you know, and he went to jail, all them kind of things. So my thing was, look, that's how I was inspired and stuff like that. And so that's a short story, hopefully.
Yeah. But I think the other thing, the stand meant that you did have to serve time. And so you were at Leavenworth, right?
Yeah, I served a total of a year in prison. But it was the right kind of exile to be in, because I met brothers from all over the country who were there for resisting the war in different ways, because some of them was there because they had shot up their chain of command over in Vietnam. So I met a lot of folks like that. Now, all of us, we pledged when we got out, we were going to go back to our hometown and form Black organizations. And so I was getting all this information from back home about Amir Baraka, other Black liberation fighters. And so my thing was, when I got out, I want to form an organization. And that's how ultimately you and I, we met along the way. Because it's like, we got to have an organization to fight the struggle out here. Because that's one thing I realized very early. You have to have an organization for real.
But you know, when you talk about that, we got that message from many different places. Get organized, start an organization, build institutions. You know, young people don't get that now. It's like all about self. Get yourself together, build your brand. And so I'm wondering, not wondering, but as you start to see why there aren't more folks talking about racial justice and social justice and organizations, is because those messages are not there. And if they're there, they're muffled. And so they've been encouraged to be individuals and not rely on the collective. And I think it's such a generational shift, because for us, we relied heavily on building intergenerational organizations and movements. Our elders were always in our ears telling us, like, you need to do this, need to do that. And sometimes they had us doing stuff that we didn't even know we could do. and we won't get into some of those things on the radio, but they saw in us like the potential for really being revolutionary change agents in a society that was anti-Black, anti-democratic, anti-women, anti-LGBT. And so we just said that's going to be our role, and we're going to understand the system as best we can so that we can bring some aspects of liberation in our communities and in this struggle. So, and I say that because then what happens is, just because of the worldview of people like you, and, you know, I definitely wasn't about to go into the service and end up going off to college, because that's what elders had said, you know, go out, get your education, whatever. And so that's what I did. But, you know, when we set up the organizational youth component, we definitely were not encouraging people, young folks, to do that as an option, a career option. When I look back, Colleen, I think about, there were two people that we had, young people that went into the service. One of them came back rather quickly. I think he was thrown out, but he had to admit, okay, y'all told me so. And then the other went on to serve. But I think we were able to keep folks from serving in the military. And then the folks that we know went in our community, they didn't come back altogether. You know, they were definitely suffering post-traumatic stress. Of course, at that time, we didn't have a name for it, but we knew that they weren't right, and they never were right again. And so, this whole thing about, well, go in and you get this paid for, you get that paid for, but at what cost? And so, in recent times, there's not been a draft, thank goodness, but I've been hearing murmurs about that, that it may be coming back, because if you got 8 damn military operations going on around the world, you're going to need some people. And so I want our young people to be thinking about that. Is that someplace where you really want to go? And there's no, in the case that you had, Colleen, well, there was no national voice saying, no, this is not right. You know, our war is at home. So I do also remember Muhammad Ali and his valiant fight. He was going to give up his, he basically gave up his belt, say, I'm not going. And that kind of commitment and that kind of sacrifice, I think it's hard to see nowadays, just because people have been just totally brainwashed about, you know, you're so smart, you can do this. And you're so smart means that you're going to serve the system of oppression. That's why you're so smart, and we're going to use you until we can't use you anymore. So thank you for sharing that, because I think it's important for people to know that there was struggle going on. There were Black men who were resisting the military and always have been. I mean, even those people who went came back and they started groups like Veterans for Peace. They started all kind of groups saying, "Don't go. We've been there. We're gonna tell you what it was like. It's not a good thing." So we always need to be lifting them up. I want to move us to the anniversary celebration because we had to cancel our regular time in January because of the big snowstorm, and so it is coming up on March 21st. But one of the things that I think we did differently than some organizations is there was a lot of preparation and thought about the theme and also the speaker. And many times that was based on whatever the material conditions were on the ground, both here in St. Louis, but also in the country. And so we would look at it and say, what do we need to be focused in on this next year? And I think one of the things that we've heard from our partners in the movement is that that really helped to inform their thinking about what their organizations were going to do. So it ended up being like in January, like the movement folks come together to hear whatever speaker that we were bringing together. So, let's talk a little bit about the thought going process going into like what the theme was going to be and ultimately who the speaker might be.
Okay, so for starters, when we chose the organizations and name, it was organization for Black struggle, not of. And it's a difference between the two. We're not saying that we are the struggle. No, we're saying we for. Our organization is for the Black struggle. And then from there, we were able to then form Black United Fronts, coalitions, and all the other kinds of things because it was all about for the Black struggle, we're doing all these things. It's not just we are not the struggle. So that was an important part. But the other thing was we thought that, instead of us later on having to have somebody who has faulty memory saying, "Well, I remember OBS. This is what they did, and I'm not sure about that part." No, our thing is let's have a celebration each year of the organization's existence. Because let me just add at this point,
And accomplishments.
right? Because Robin Kelly, one of the things he said last year's speaker, keynote speaker, he said, "OBS, longevity. You know, how many can you point to 45 years was last year? Longevity." So therefore, when you start talking about the legacy of the organization, it's 45 years that you can examine and see what we accomplished as an organization and what the movement accomplished. And those kinds of things there, that was what we had in mind when we decided, like, let's celebrate it every year, bring everybody in the movement, bring everybody in the movement together, celebrate together all our victories, and then like, learn from our defeats and see how we're gonna all move forward for the rest of the year, and so that was part of like the kind of thinking that went into it. And so in terms of things, we always tried to be analytical and look at what was going on in St. Louis and throughout the whole state and the country and the world. We said, well, which of these issues is going to impact us the most that we need to bring to our audience? And we had a lot of different ideas. We always did. We had a democratic process of coming up with the theme and stuff like that. And so we would come up with some pretty good themes. And I think most of them hit on the target, most of the things that we came up with.
And so generally, once we got the theme, we say, who best can speak to this? And our
Exactly.
criteria was people had to be involved. They couldn't be no damn just, highfalutinous armchair stuff, because we wanted people to understand this is a struggle and people are going to be active in that struggle. And so we looked around to our Black Liberation Movement and the people that we knew and respected, and then we asked them to be a part of it. And I don't think there's been not one time that we asked and people did not come, and sometimes at their own expense. Well, most of the time at their own expense. But I just want to tick off a couple of the names of the themes, because those are in the 45th anniversary commemorative edition. And so we have, for example, the New South Africa, Where Do You Stand? And that was at the height of the anti-apartheid movement, where we wanted people to understand. And really, for 3 years, we brought in speakers from South Africa, because one of them was for the PAC, Pan-African Congress. Another one was ANC, because those were two different groups, really with two different strategies around liberation. And so we didn't want to discriminate. So we had both of them come. And we also had Amedi Baraka, who we brought him at the height of the Jesse Jackson campaign, and we talked about the theme was Reaganomics, Election 84, and Black Liberation. So that pulled all of that together. In 2002, Black Liberation, the struggle for reparations, justice, and peace. And we had Ajua Ayatora, who was one of the architects of the reparations movement. And at that point, people weren't even talking about reparations, you know, in the way that they are now. And so people could see that even in 2002, we were already thinking about how are we going to make this a viable living thing. And now what you have in a number of cities, you have reparations commissions, and some of them are already moving on getting reparations for that particular locale. And so I think those are something to be proud of. We had Chokwe Lumumba to talk about Black empowerment in the age of Obama. And that was because he was getting ready to run for office, or maybe he had already run for office for mayor of Jackson. But we brought people that were on the battlefield and who were bringing a perspective to us and some strategies for us so that people don't feel so isolated. It's like, this is going on all over the country, y'all. We're not the only ones dealing with these issues. And so some of these folks, you know, we have, I think for almost all of them, we recorded them in video. So we have those that we're going to memorialize at the Missouri State Historical Society, who are preserving our archives. And so one of the things that we will be doing this year is introducing people to those archives and how to use them and the curriculum that we've developed around them. And in particular, just because we knew that local control was going to be an issue, we wanted to show people how we went from a protest around the Marilyn Banks murder by Joseph Ferrario in 1983 up to when we got local control of the St. Louis Police Department and an independent civilian oversight board. Now, all of those are under attack now, we know, but people need to know how we got there, because then this is the next stage of the struggle. But people need to know where we came from, and that's going to be important for moving forward. And there's going to be a lot of activity already. You know, we're in the budget process. There's meetings, there's trainings, and I'm going to try to, you know, get those dates for you. But what we try to be is as relevant as possible in terms of the issues that we were bringing to our community, so that they understood that they were part of a larger struggle in this U.S. And I don't want to ask you which one of those speakers that stood out for you, but it was hard. I think they all, every time there's one, then I say, this is it. Because last year I totally enjoyed the remarks that brother Robert Kelly brought to us. And yeah, it's like they always nail it, you know, when they come, and they have already sort of have an idea of what's going on in St. Louis, and so they always connect the dots for us, and so that's always been pretty powerful. Yeah, I want to go back for a minute. You want to say something about the ACs?
Yeah, right. You know what I want to say is that, see, each of the speakers, I mean, they were just outstanding, and it's just really almost unfair to try to say which one was the best, because all of them, they had powerful messages. And we know this because of the kind of response that we got from the crowds that came out, and they had a chance to interact with those speakers. And here's something else too. We never went and got for example, a Jesse Jackson, all those people that was gonna be hard to get with all this money and stuff. We went and got people that were part of the movement who we had some kind of real relationship with, and they knew what we were doing. And so as Jamal was pointing out, in most cases, they came at their own expense, and then we worked some other things while they were here to be able to compensate them being here and stuff like that. And so that always worked out well. And that's still how we do it, because we are not one of your richer organizations in this city. In fact, we're one of your poor organizations and stuff. And, you know, we be rubbing them nickels and dimes and pennies together real good. I mean, people may not realize it because we don't go around holding the cup out begging like that, but we still say, donate. We need your money because we're going to show you what we're going to do with it. It's about the struggle, and we need
And
it for
we're going to make it go a long ways.
That's right. That's right.
So two things, Khalil, based on what you said is, one is that each one of those presentations were very different because these are different people. So I remember, for example, Jerry Bujillo, who used to be part of a cultural group, part of her presentation was song and rap. And so it just they just bring their own flavor, their own unique way of doing stuff. And we really, really always, you know, love whatever they do for us. Damn, I forgot the other thing. It was two things you made me think about. But I wanted to go back for a minute for the war stuff, because now I think most Black people, unlike the scenario that you pointed out when you were in high school that you didn't know very many, most of us now have somebody in our family that was in the military, went in the military, and they went pretty much in a non-combat time, like they just got assigned to someplace. So when I think about for my family, like all the men in my family went into some branch of the armed service. So I got a good perspective about how these folks operate, regardless of what the branch is. And, you know, it seems to me that we still don't see the U.S. military as being the aggressor in the world. You know, there's all this hype about like they defended democracy, but there's been very few times when they actually defended democracy. They defended the resources, potential resources of the U.S. So even now, the fact that they're bombing Iran, the fact that they took out the removed the president of Venezuela, that's not about defending democracy. That's about like trying to get into those people's resources. And when I think about the attack on Iran, now we know what's happening with the Ayatollah. So there's no naivety on our part. But when you think you can go into a country, take their leader out, which the CIA has been doing for a while, and steal their resources, that's just the height of arrogance and the height of what I would say white supremacy. And so this war, and this is how it connects with us at home, is costing at least on a daily basis $1 billion a day. Now these folks can find money for that, but they couldn't find money for SNAP. They can't find money for other things that actually are building. They can't find money for infrastructure. $1 billion a day, and we've been there at least 10 days. So that's $10 billion. And they're getting ready to ask Congress for some more money to continue the bombings. So what does that mean for us? We need to be telling our Congress people no to this war, no to our money going out. Because I think people don't see tax money as their money because they don't see it. It's gone, it's not in their purse. But when you start to see those gas prices go up, the grocery prices go up, now you can make the connection. It's the damn wars that we keep, the endless wars that we keep it in. It's not one place, it's gonna be another. And now we got eight of them going on. So I just wanted to tie that up, that the fact that these folks bombed Iran, took out their religious leader. This is something else. Because when you do that, now you are ruffling the feathers of Muslims around the world. And they did it during Ramadan. I mean, what? What are y'all doing? So, and I've been writing about this for a long time. Every time something like that happens, trust and believe, the anti-American sentiment goes up a few notches. And sometimes it's directed at people who had nothing to do with it, but it's such hate against Americans. And there we have it. And that's why we have to continue to fight against U.S. aggression in other places. I want to go to another more lighter note, and that's our youth organization, because they are the love of our life and they are the future. And as I said before, we were doing youth work and organizing them, youth development, before the founding of the Organization for Black Struggle. And we had the OBS Youth Group. who then decided on their own. They wanted their name and they wanted their own independence, and became the Youth Council for Positive Development. But the newsletter that we did from them, we asked them, like, what do you remember? What do you hold dear? And I think some of the things that they held dear were really very, very touching. Because sometimes you don't know that they always see the impact that the program had on them. And Babas like you were part of it. Baba Two, Mama Dia, Mama Juju. That Saturdays mornings, that was the time that we were going to spend with the kids, and that was important for us. And some of the things that they talked about was their ability, their confidence level, because the youth culture theater, they had to perform in front of people. They had to learn lines, they had to learn poems, they had to learn lines in their skits. And so the confidence that they have, and when you see them, you say, And then even some of the development of the skills, people like Jelani Brown, like Chris Brown, all of them. I mean, Chris Brown is the one who introduced me to the whole concept of anime. I didn't even know what that was, and so he was into that, drawings and all of that. So I think they helped us develop as much as we helped them. And so from what you remember of the MIAT program and the Youth Culture Theater and even the ceremonies that we had around rites of passage, what do you think was the contribution we made to young people that were in our circle and then ultimately in the city?
I think, the main thing, we set a positive example. That is, like, we were there, as we would call them, like, the mamas and babas. That is, like, mothers and fathers on Saturdays. And they came together and we enforced the whole atmosphere of unity among all of the kids that was there. So we didn't have no bullying going on, nothing like that. We had everybody really coming together. And we had things that challenged them and stuff like that. And they appreciated us for being able to present an atmosphere for them to actually grow. And we encouraged them and stuff like that, and then with all the things they were able to do, all the field trips. And I was a part of a lot of those field trips, coming up with the ideas and organizing like the parents and stuff like that to get as many people involved as possible. And it was always great experiences. They always enjoyed those kinds of things, And by the way, I was also the one person when there was some child that had some problems, and I just walked them up the block and we talked and stuff like that, just like here directly and stuff. The rest of the my I could go on and stuff. So we just did all those kind of things. We took them camping and stuff. They enjoyed that stuff like that and stuff too. So I'm just saying, it was that kind of vibe that they enjoyed, and if they could be there, they was there. Sometimes we had to go and pick them up, kind of thing. But it didn't matter because they loved it. And the other thing about it, they went with us canvassing the neighborhood around various issues, whether it's like around elections coming up, or if we was having a street festival, or whatever, fighting against like the death penalty, or et cetera. They were right there, and so they absorbed a lot of that stuff. And I think they really thought that we were a positive example for them. And so when I see them, I don't have no respect, but I know which ones of them was the
There's no such thing as a bad kid.
I know this, but
they just need to be redirected.
we had good fun at the picnics and stuff too, because at that time we all come together once a year annually for the picnic, OBS picnic and stuff, CPD picnic and things. And I used to play basketball with them and beat them. I was young then. They got
And
older and
some of the
started beating
relay
me.
races too,
Right. And they got older, they sort of beat me and everything. I said, okay, it's time for me to quit. But those are some of the experiences I still remember from them. And I know they still remember me as well from that standpoint.
But now I think that the two things that kept coming up was them being able to travel, because every year we would go to the National Black United Front Conference. So they got to go to many cities that they probably never would have gotten to go to, but they also got to meet people. And so they met people, I think at one of the conferences we had Jesse Jackson there. And so they remember that, like, I got the chance to meet Jesse Jackson. So, and when we were doing the anti-apartheid movement and Nelson, Mandela was released and came to the US to thank people. Two of our young people got a chance to go to Detroit to be a part of that, Halisi Adesha and also Rob Silvestri. And so those are the kind of things that people remember and that we want young people to remember. We want to give them those memories of fun times, but also times that were important to their own development about who they are as young Black people in a world that is not very kind to young Black people, and ultimately not very kind to Black people, period. But yeah, they continue to be a source of inspiration. And as you say, whenever you see them, no matter where they are, you know, they know, you know, and you just get a big hug. So, you know, the thing that's front and center now is in St. Louis is community control of the police. And we were fighting for community control of police even under in the 70s when we had the Congress African People chapter here, and we had the Stop Killer Cops campaign. All of that we brought in with us to the Organization for Black Struggle. So we were one of the premier organizations that were opposing police terror, police abuse, and really struggling not just for the individual cases, which we did for a very long time, but we said this is unsustainable, like these one cases at a time. Like we were successful in getting you know, people fired or you know, whatever, but the system was what was continuing to create this whole madness. And so we decided that we were going to go for local control of the police department. And I remember one of the older people said, you know, this group of ragtag people not going to do anything, you know. And we just said, hey, y'all don't know the power of the people, because when you fight, you win. When you organize, you win. And so ultimately, it took us a while, but we got local control of the police. And so what we see now is this, all these undemocratic moves, and this, you know, part of the MAGA plan. We saw Project 25. We saw what they had, what they were going to do, and they pretty much have been doing all that they said they were going to do. And so it's take back time. And when they say take back, they mean make America great again. That means make it white again, make it male again, make it all the stuff that doesn't include the majority of the people. So for us, Kalima, where do you see some of the pressure points in this movement going forward? Because I think people feel like it's not a whole lot we can do. We don't control even on the state level. And then sometimes on the local level, including the mayor, they act like they're scared of the Republicans. And so, what do you see as a couple of pressure points for us to, and who knows if we'll get local control back, but we do have some control over that budget, and that's where some of the pressure points are now. But do you see any other pressure points?
Well, I agree with you that that is definitely one of the pressure points, but that we have to like look at all of the avenues. For example, like the suit that you and the brother with the
Mike Melton.
right, Mike Melton, challenging the takeover of the police department by the state. That's one of the, to me, one of the pressure points that we should pursue. I think that wherever it is, we should be doing that at the same time, trying to rebuild, which I think, and re-energize CAPCR, the Coalition Against the Police Crimes and Repression, because we had a great impact. But then over time, you know how things kind of fade out because other issues take precedence. But now we need it because the police state is breathing down on us, ain't that right, ICE? You know, and you know.
And the surveillance data centers, all of that.
Yeah, and we know that, like, you know, the police brutality piece, that's ongoing, and even down there at the Injustice Center. So, you know, so those are some of the fronts that we have to fight on. And at a certain point, we'll see which one will be successful. But if we get people involved on those different fronts, then I think that we can push forward. You know, the key thing is get as many people as involved in it, and if folks understand, it will make a difference. Most people don't understand that when you stand up and step and push to go forward, you make a difference because they expect you to lay down. They don't expect you to have to fight back. They expect you to say, well, we don't know what's going on. We just follow what they're talking about. No. And so that would be what I would add.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The other thing that I've been really advocating for is a mass education program that counters all of the stupidity that's out there now, because I think it's hard for people who work every day, sometimes two or three jobs, trying to make it to pull it together, don't have the time to sort through this stuff. And so what does it mean now? What's going on now that you need to be paying attention to, and where can you step in to have an impact? And we're certainly going to be giving people opportunities to do that on the local level, just like, you know, people converged on Jeff City yesterday for the hearing at the Missouri Supreme Court. I don't know when the case of Rogers versus the state of Missouri is going to happen, because it's been postponed twice, but it looks like it might happen late spring. And so we'll definitely be letting people know about that. But coming up is the Coalition Against Police Crimes meeting at 6 p.m. That's tomorrow at the Deaconess Center. And we're going to have Annie Rice talk about the budget process, because oftentimes, Colleen, well, this is part of the education that we don't even know how things work. So when we start to like, I don't like that, let's protest, folks don't even know where to protest, what's the best person, the best institution. And so Annie's going to walk us through this. Annie Rice now is that she's an attorney at Art City Defenders, and they are part of the legal team for Rogers versus the state of Missouri, but she's also a former alderperson, so she knows this budget process well. And so she's going to be walking us through that so that we understand. There's going to be budget hearings, there's going to be a public safety hearing, and we need people to be a part of those. Even if you don't feel confident enough to testify, be there to support others that are. And most of these meetings are virtual, so you can go online and be a part of it, because we want these people to know that there is interest, that people feel like they have a stake in what's going on in the city, and that they're going to be involved in some level. So to me right now, that is the big thing for St. Louis, this budget, because the police have already asked for more than what they're supposed to get. And even the mayor said that it's going to have a detrimental impact on city services and city programs. But obviously, it's so what? You know, we more important than any other city agency and any other services that you have. And so I think our voices have to be heard, that that's not the case, and that, you know, people matter. Our public safety is not just about police. It's about community having what they need to thrive. And so, yeah, so there's just a lot going on, and people know that these programs that you see, both video and audio, you can catch them on JamalaRogers.com, as well as the events. So I'm gonna try my best to keep you updated on the events part. But tomorrow is Thursday at 6 o'clock, the CAPCOR meeting at the Deaconess Center. And so look on the website and see what's going on. And so I'm gonna go into some of the one of the big things coming up, Kalimu, is the No Kings March. And I know the Organization for Black Struggle has endorsed it, as they did the previous ones. What do you think is the energy around that, what impact it could have on national politics?
I think the energy is great. It keeps increasing with each time that they hold the event. And I think it's going to be even bigger because we all are beginning to recognize that they're coming for us, for all of us. It don't matter what your color is, what your gender is, you know, If you are an essential worker or not, they're coming for everybody. And so therefore we have to like stand up because we believe that we should unite the many to the few, those greedy, blood-sucking capitalist folks in the White House and we erase stuff. So I think people are finally realizing we got to do that. Because like I said once before, ICE, okay, it's folks that's going to be out there on No King's Day that's out there because they oppose what ICE is doing, that brutality that that's going down. So,
And Kalimu is not just happening in Minneapolis. People are being snatched off the street right here in St. Louis.
Exactly. And so therefore, that's the kind of resistance. This represents the resistance. If you don't resist, they're going to sweep you on up and you're going to find yourself in some foreign country. You don't know where the hell you at. You know, and
can't speak the language. Yeah.
Disappeared. Yeah. They disappeared you because you used to hear that term in old days. Oh, this person got disappeared. Okay, so now they're doing it in the United States. Okay, so why we coming out on the 28th of March. You know, no King's Day. We're against them king. People want to be king. Forget y'all.
And now, OBS is going to have an ad in the St. Louis American. And we say not only no kings, but no queens, no clowns, no thrones. Because part of what's going on now is, for example, Catherine Hanaway, who's now AG, Attorney General for the state, is now trying to walk back some of the already exonerated people. So it's like, wait a minute, these people have gone on with their lives and you talk about now you want to revisit it. So Chris Dunn's life is now in limbo because these folks want to try. So the power that they have, or they're actually overstepping, and we need to say, no, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. Here's what you're supposed to do. And her obviously want to be a queen. So it's for people like her, and even for the mayor, when she starts to overstep her bounds, Kara Spencer. And so it's not just about the men folk. It's about the women who want to follow suit and also abuse and step over people. And so the No Kings, and we'll have something on the website for that, because it's like two locations in the city. One is going to be at the Tam overpass near Forest Park, and the other one is going to be downtown. But, we want people to show up because that's another, I always say that's a way for us to show the world that we're not down with what these folks are doing, because they need to see that we are in opposition. Because otherwise they say, well, look at them. They must support that fool because nobody's saying anything, but we are and we will. And so March 28th, we want people to come out. You got your choices where you can go. But you need to be there. Your body needs to be there. Sometimes your body just need to be part of the count so that people could see the depth and breadth of the opposition to the policies and practices of this authoritarian government.
Let me add this to that, right quick. And that's the fact that those large gatherings, it brings together a diverse crowd. And you meet new people. You meet organizations that you had not got a chance to meet, and vice versa. And so what you're doing is you're building the movement. There's more familiarity among all the people that are struggling against the same system and stuff like that. So to me, that's what's great about it as well. Because when you leave there, you may have some names wrote down that you got, as well as this is a place to pass out your information. It's going to be thousands and thousands of people. So if you got something coming up, this is the place to be and collect information as well.
And people want to know what's going on, what you're doing. Here's what I'm doing. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely lots of networking happening on March 21st at No Kings. And I always say no queens, no kings, no queens, no clowns, no thrones. So, we want to be there. So the 28th, what did I say?
21st.
Oh, okay. The March 21st is the Organization for Black Struggles 46th anniversary celebration. And that is going to be at the University of Missouri Century Room. And they are partnering with us because that's where our archives are. And so we've been developing a program and developing some oral history, lots of different interesting stuff. And some of us are learning how to do this digital stuff better, how to do the storytelling better, how to archive better. And so for Black organizations, that's extremely important when you got a government now that's dismantling anything Black, anything with history. So our Black books are being banned. Some of our schools are being defunded. The diversity, equity, inclusion programs are being defunded. And so for us to assert ourselves now is very important. And so I think, Kalima, we are right on point with, you know, the whole legacy thing being part of the theme for this year, March 21st at 4 p.m. And that's also on the website. So if you didn't get that from me talking about it, or Carleen was saying it, that's what's happening on the 21st. So that's in my head more than the 28th. We'll get to the 28th. We've got to get through the 21st. I did want to let people know that the Cabinet and Julia Davis Brent Libraries are going to be opening up late May, and those were damaged to the tornado. And for us, the Cabinet branch has a soft spot in our heart, because we used to take our kids there for the Mayotte. They all had library cards. We had programs there. And so we know Cabinet well. And so it's been down since the tornado. So now, a year later, they will be opening up. So that's good news. More good news, the Brick in a Bible performance by Bread and Roses sold out, y'all. I told you last week, get your tickets. Maybe they'll have some more performances, because it's a powerful performance. Our folks got it together. They got the history together about the sisters who fought for a union here, right here in St. Louis, against the Funston Nut Company. So that's, can't do nothing with that. That's gone. But kudos for the people who signed up and got their tickets ahead of time. Anything that you know, Kalima, that's going to be going on between now and next week?
Not off the top of my head.
But I do want people to make some time for what your participation is to saving this democracy, and to saving what's going on here, even in your city. I'd like to thank Kalimu Endesha, one of the founding members of the Organization for Black Struggle, a founding member of the Infrared Rockers, and so much more. If you want to access the 45th commemorative editions that we were referring to for OBS and the Youth Council, you can access those on my website or the OBS website, but do so, and you'll see a scope of things that you probably were involved in as well. But yeah, check that out. And this is Jamala Rogers, and I will see you on the battlefield. Thank you for listening. Right now.